everybody. This is The Christian Contrarian. I'm Gary Wayne, author of The Genesis 6 Conspiracy. This is Episode 5, The Rephaim Kingships, Dynasties, and How They Interact with Biblical Prophecy. And in the previous shows, we discussed the Angelic Rebellion, we discussed the Sons of God and who the giants were, and how important it was to understand who these players are in relationship to the polytheist religion implemented by the fallen angels before the flood, and also understanding that these players and organizational structure cross the flood, and how they persecuted humans before the flood and enslaved humans before the flood, caused the apocalypse, and now how they're going to do the same thing after the flood, because nothing is new under the sun. And within the first 70 to 100 years after the flood, in the third generation and in the generation of Nimrod, we actually see these components and organizational structure starting to come together again. And with Nimrod, we have this polytheist religion that we now call Babel and Babylon in end time prophecy, which was the antediluvian religion of Enoch, son of Cain, and known as Enochian mysticism, and or just mysticism in general, that has now been rediscovered after the flood and implemented by Nimrod at Babel, who becomes an antichrist type figure and a archetypical model of what the end time is going to look like, with a Nimrod like a antichrist figure with his polytheist Babel religion, Babylon religion, as part of that organizational structure. And this happens within 70 to 100 years after the flood. This brings upon the Babel incident, where you have the dispersion of the peoples and the confusions of the languages. And for the most part, this religion and organizational structure is going to split into two. The first pillar is going to remain in Sumeria, Shinar, as it's transliterated, and Chaldea, as it also becomes known, which is also a name for Babylon. All important names as you're trying to understand Bible prophecy, stays with Nimrod and is developed into the various empires after the flood that come out of Mesopotamia, and the mystical religions that you would know are the Magi, who are the priests. And these religions are continued to develop in Mesopotamia under Nimrod and with his descendants thereafter. The second part moves over to Egypt. And Egypt will implement this as a second pillar of mysticism. And between Sumeria and Egypt, this is going to spread this organizational structure and religion with Rephaim kingships all around the world as the population begins to increase. And how this sort of sets up is we have Chaldea on one side, we have Egypt on the other side, and we also have Rephaim showing up in the land of the covenant, sort of in the middle. And with the many nations of the Rephaim that are living in ambush waiting for Israel. And what we need to understand what's going on here is that the Rephaim dynasties are established and permitted to enslave humankind in the world and continue to persecute humankind in the feudal system that they're going to set up with them and their relatives and their cousins as the elite class. And this is the infrastructure that is going to affect all of our history and is actually the delivery system for prophecy. And most people don't understand how this is interconnected. And many people may disagree with me that there's a single source, central planning source and conspiracy through these various dynasties and empires throughout our history. And I don't necessarily disagree with that, but it's the organizational structure that is propped up and funded by, in terms of energy and knowledge, by the fallen angels who are not in the abyss, that continues through the many different dynasties and kingships to implement this conspiracy to enslave humankind to almost take us out in terms of a genocide, all in the understanding that they want to prevent humans from being resurrected above angels in the future time. Now, of course, with the resurrection, that has become fait accompli, but as we talk about what happens early on the flood, that has not yet happened. So it's important to understand that, and that they're going to continue the fight even after Jesus resurrects and sets the end game up. And so this is the antediluvian structure that brought down the pre-flood world. And this is the same delivery system and organizational structure that is going to bring about the second apocalypse, this time by fire. And so it's important to put the beginnings of this structure together as how it comes about, because we don't know where the giants show up. We don't know whether it's second incursion, which is my favorite position, or somehow they survive the flood. But if we look at the ancient history from about 2400 BC, which is the biblical chronology, you know, within 100 years as to when the flood take place. So it doesn't always line up with secular chronology, but some of the secular chronology tends to repeat some of the dynasties. So without getting into the argument in terms of how to sync those two chronologies up, we're going to stick with the biblical chronology, because a lot of the archaeological discoveries tend to line up quite well with what we're going to talk about today. So these Rephaim, even though we don't know where they come from, and I side on the part of second incursion, are also known in the occult world and in the secular world to a certain degree, understanding that it's the occult that's providing the belief system in behind the curtain, like the Wizard of Oz for the secular system. This all comes from polytheism in the occult world, is we have a group of people that are known as the Aryans or the Indo-Aryans, and they're also known in many circles as the Scythians and or the Maria Anu, who show up right after the flood, and they're going to migrate south into the covenant land. They're going to migrate into Mesopotamia, where Nimrod and Babel and Shinar were set up. And they're going to migrate north into along the Danube and into Russia and into Sweden. And they're also going to migrate into Ireland and England, and also known down through history as the Tuatha De Danann, or the tribe of Danu. And it all sort of interconnects, because these are the overlords of Scythia or Turkey, where they first sort of kind of show up as a group of people, and also known as the overlords of Sumeria. And these are, as I say, the tribe of Anu. And so you have this group as they move sort of south into the Middle East, into the Covenant Land and into Sumeria. And you also have another western branch of the Maria Anu, which settle in the Indus Valley. And that's why you have gods like Indra and Mithra and other similar words within the religious pantheon that have pretty much the identical meanings and fit the identical gods and or positions and or infrastructure. Now, out of this group of people that's known by all of these different names, and they are one group of people, these are the Rephaim. And they are also known as, in the western area, the ones who settle into the Middle East and into the Mesopotamian region, they're known as the Kassites and the Mitanni and the Hurrians. And these are all known throughout secular history, occult history, and we'll know them by other names as we start to talk about this as the show progresses. So you have the Kassites, who are Aryans, as we mentioned before, Indo-Aryan, and they're called Indo-Aryan war chiefs. And they're going to settle down as far south as into Saudi Arabia and intermix with the Horim and probably some of the Hivim, and with later with the Edomites, with Eliphaz and Timna. And Timna is a Horim and a daughter of Seir, who is also a Horim chief. And also they're going to intermarry with Edomites and create a dynasty there. So you're going to have hybrids being created with the descendants of Esau, who is the brother of Isaac, son of Abraham. So you have, that's the first group. And you also have the next group, which are the Hurrians. And again, both the Hurrians and the Kassites have a dating from about 2400 BC or before. And it's the Hurrians that are going to intermix with Canaanites and the tribe of Heth out of Canaan, son of Canaan, and create the Hittite hybrid empire, just like the Amalekim are going to be part of a hybrid empire, even though there's a separate purebred Rephaim of the Amalekim recorded in Genesis 14 that predates it, but they take that patronymic name with the daughter of Eliphaz and Timnaz naming him Amalek. And you also have the Hurrians also intermarrying with the Edomites. So you have a few different groups of the same types of giants that are intermarrying with the Edomites. And then you have all of these other tribes that are going to settle into the promised land, whether or not it's the Anakim or the Emim or the Zamzuzim and the Avim. Again, these are all, as Deuteronomy 2 describes, different branches of the Rephaim. And you also have the Mitanni, who are going to settle into Egypt as well and create the Pharaonic dynasty. And Egypt is going to continue to intermarry with these pureblood lines of Aryans to keep their bloodlines pure, which becomes a complete heraldic reproduction and genealogical source, because the hierarchy of the occult is about the purity of the pedigree. And so the Mitanni and the Kassite dynasties are the preferred intermarriages, because the other ones are hybrids that we talked about. There will be some intermarriage there, and the Amalekim are a purebred bloodline, which they also, the Egyptians also like to intermarry with. But this becomes what we know coming out of Saudi Arabia and the Amalekites and the Edomites as the chiefs of Edom, just as the Kassites are the war chiefs. And this is the Albigens bloodline that we're talking about that's going to come down through history and be part of the dynastic bloodlines. And it's the same name that the Tuatha De Danann that we talked about will also utilize, just as the Cathars, which is again a descended religion of Babel and Enochian mysticism and Egyptian, because they're all the same pantheon that is set up after Babel, they are going to take on the name of the Albigensians, I should say, and the Cathars, where the Elven bloodline is the bloodline that goes back to these Nephilim or the Rephaim and back to the fallen angels. And the fairy bloodline comes out of that, the Tuatha De Danann and the matriarchal bloodline, as opposed to the matriarchal dragon bloodline. The fairy bloodline allegory comes out of Eliphaz, as in Eliph, which is a transliteration of Elven, which they call this Albigens, the Elven bloodline, and out of Duke or Chief, just as the Kassites were the war chiefs. And that goes back to the Hebrew word Aleph again. So they use both of those words and used it out of Genesis 36 as sort of the genesis of that fairy bloodline and the whole fairy culture. And when we understand that there's these three main groups of Rephaim kingships, these are the ones that are going to produce the major dynasties that we're going to talk about in a few minutes. But I want you to understand, though, that the eastern ones, we can take this back biblically to a source, I think. And this is the Kadmonites, along with with what I call the ancient KKK of Genesis 15, and or the people of Kedar in Jeremiah 49, and noting that Kedar goes back and roots back into Kadmonite. And Kadmonite means, as you take that back in its meaning, as Orientals or Eastern people, as ancient people and a time before. So these are original people, either right after the flood, a separate race, and or survivors after, you know, of the flood, and reproduce again after the flood, whichever way that you prefer to go with how these giants show up. These are the eastern peoples. These are the ones that are going to intermarry with Nimrod, and these are the same peoples that branch out and intermarry with the Egyptian dynasty and set up all of the dynasties after the flood. I would also say that First Chronicle gives us a hint at this as well with Beth Rapha, which is the house of Rapha. This is the dynastic house of Rapha, or giants after the flood. And they settle, as I say, throughout Mesopotamia, throughout the Middle East, and intermarry and create the Egyptian dynasty. And you have in Genesis 14 this war of giants that come out of Mesopotamia that are going to war against all of these other names of giants that we've talked about, whether or not it is the hybrids in Canaan around Sodom, whether it's the Rephaim, whether or not it is the Amalekim, and all the other names that are listed in that war. Understand that these eastern people are also giants. They're not humans. Even though Nimrod intermarries with them and there's a human interaction in there and there are some hybrid nations, the root is still giants. And this is a war about power. Just like with all the different branches, they all want to be on top. So even though directionally they're moving in the same direction, they want to be the controlling power. And that's always been part of their weakness as it comes down through the line. Now, as we understand this as it's rolling forward, so now we have, before you get into the prophetic dynasties and how it's going to affect Israel, you have these three major empires that are all Rephaim-based. So you have Shinar that we've talked about in Sumer, where Nimrod starts and intermarries with the giants to take control of the kingships, just as Rephaim usurp all of the kingships after the flood. They do this through in Shinar with Nimrod and create a hybrid branch. And so these are the eastern Rephaim people, the Kadamites, the Aryans that are going to intermarry with Nimrod and his descendants. And this is the civilization that Abraham is born into and then is taken and asked to move, and he migrates into another hotbed of giants with all of the giants waiting in Israel to ambush the nation of Israel to prevent them from fulfilling their destiny later on. But this is the people that Abraham is going to go live amongst. And then you have Jacob and all of Israel being sent to Egypt, where Israel is going to be born. So within this delivery system, as I'm starting to lay out, you're starting to see how our salvation is being created and nurtured in the middle of this worldwide organizational structure of polytheism. You're going to have monotheism and salvation recreated, because God is just greater than free choice, and he's greater than all of these other forces combined, and he's going to do it to let humans freely choose to be raised above angels in the future time, and he's going to do it because he's greater than free choice. And so Jacob goes to Egypt and Israel is raised, and then they're going to leave Israel, and they're going to be attacked by the Amalekim, and Israel's going to try and attack them, and also fails, and the army is destroyed in the sea. Amalekim is destroyed, and Israel is going to push out the Rephaim nations from the promised land. And they're going to be interacting with these surrounding nations from that point on. But again, you can see how these Rephaim kingships are all part of what's going on, because the Philistines or the Canaanite hybrids or the Rephaim kings around Sodom and Gomorrah and the Anakim that are throughout the land, these are all enemies of Israel trying to prevent Israel from producing the Messiah. And after they've conquered the covenant land and have failed in fulfilling the Holy Covenant several times, they're going to be punished, Israel is. And Israel is going to divide into two kingdoms after the monarchy and after the judge, or when the monarchy comes about after the age of judges, and they're going to split into the northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah. And you need to apply prophecies as they're named to Judah and or to Israel, along with Jacob also applying to Israel as well. And so Assyria comes out of these Shinar, Chaldean, Akkadian empires descended through Nimrod and through the Aryans, the Amaria Anu, the Rephaim. And this is the first major empire after Babel that is in sort of full control. And I recognize Egypt would be equal to that before that, as we talked about with Israel being raised there. But Assyria is now going to be the nation that is going to punish Israel for the covenant, and they're also going to be punishing all the other surrounding Rephaim nations to build the first empire, but not part of the metallic dynasties, which is interesting. So not as powerful as what Babylon is going to be, as described in Daniel 2. And so when we talk about Babylon is going to punish Assyria and Egypt, and again, all of the Rephaim nations, and it's going to consolidate all of these kingships under this world empire concept that Daniel 2 is going to talk about in the metallic empires. And this is important as well because Judah is now taken into exile, just as Israel was taken into exile and then lost into the world until they're going to be awakened in the end time. So Judah is now taken to Babylon at the time of the Babylonian Empire. So you see how prophecy and the destiny of humankind is being done through this infrastructure of these Rephaim kingships. Then comes Persia Medes Empire, and it's going to punish and destroy Babylon, but it's going to permit Judah to go back and build the temple and create the second temple system and prevent the time frame for the Messiah to come, and also I would say that this Persia and the Media kings are also uniting all of these Rephaim bloods, because again they have an empire that goes from Ethiopia to the Indus Valley, and they also go back to take their language and their history back to the Indo-Aryans. And they also believe that their kingship names are done with a patronymical way, taking them back to the same Rephaim kings or the Marianu. Then along comes Greece. And what's important here about Greece is it also now destroys the empire before, consolidates all of the empires, and it may even be part of the seven empires that are talked about in Revelation, where you have the ram and goat prophecy of Daniel 8, and five have fallen, as it talks about in Revelation. So you've got Alexander and then the four empires that are established after Alexander is five. And then as Revelation talks about, one is, which is Rome succeeds Greece, and one is to come, which is the seventh empire. Or it could be the seven empires that include Egypt, Assyria, and then the four empires and the extended empire or the risen empire of the Roman Empire in the end time. But through this, you now have, in the time of Rome, the Messiah coming and crucified, and then again, Judah being punished and dispersed again to the world. So again, being fulfilled through these Rephaim dynasties. And all of these dynasties take their, including the Romans, they take their kings and noble people back, in this case, to the Roman gods, but it's all the same sort of source and organizational structure and religion, and they're all directionally moving in the same time, in the same direction. And the ten-king empire of the end time is going to come out of the Roman Empire, and it will be, you know, a globalist empire of 10 nations and 10 kings. And this will emulate when Antichrist takes over at the midpoint what happened at Babel, where you have the Babylon Babel religion and you have a new Nimrod as Antichrist having the same sort of architectural setup as we did right after the flood within 100 years. So nothing is new under the sun. So if one is going to understand end time prophecy, we have to understand the relationship between these kingships and their dynasties and their bloodlines and their genealogies. And when we look at Babylon to end time Rome, these are the metallic dynasties. And these are the seven kings or seven empires that we need to understand if we're going to understand Daniel 2, Daniel 7, Revelation, Daniel 8. We need to understand that. And Daniel 8 could be with the five that are fallen, I mean, and in relationship to the seven kings, the seven empires of Revelation, it could be a dual prophecy, so it could be both. So I'm open to both ends. But what's important is in the metallic dynasties, and Daniel 2:43 in particular, you have the descendants of the metallic dynasties that are listed, and these are gold Babylon, silver Persia, bronze Greece, iron Rome, and iron and clay, which is the human component of the end time empire. And in Daniel 2:43, you have the descendants, the bloodlines of these metallic empires mixing with human seed to create the two legs of that end time empire of iron and clay. So I think it's going to be a mix of humans, human hybrids, and of the Rephaim descendants who are establishing this world empire that Antichrist is going to take over in the end time. And this, again, is the same model as we talked about that started off the post-diluvian epoch. And this is the same thing that happened before the flood that caused the first apocalypse. So when we're looking at understanding Rephaim in history, we have to, recognize that they existed. And then second, we have to understand that when prophecy is talking about these dynasties, these are the Rephaim dynasties. These are the royal bloodlines of today. This is still the bloodlines of the elite that have the feudal system over humans and are always trying to keep us in poverty, no matter what system they introduce, and keep themselves living in luxury and the ruling class. Nothing has changed. And if you're going to understand the dual prophecies that I mentioned earlier, whether it's Daniel 8 is a dual prophecy, but specifically Isaiah 13 and 14 is a prophecy and a dual prophecy dealing with these empires and with the end time, just as you have the same thing in the destruction of Babylon in Jeremiah 50 and 51. That's a dual prophecy. To understand it properly, you need to understand that. Ezekiel 28 and Ezekiel 32 is also a dual prophecy, as well as Isaiah 22. And you need to understand that these same prophecies use prehistory allegory to define the player. So just like when you get into Ezekiel 32 and you have all of these different Rephaim kings as you take things back to Hebrew and their graves that are alongside of the pit that are communicating with Pharaoh in this case, which is a dual prophecy for that time, at the time of Nebuchadnezzar and for the end time, what you have is these past kingdoms, these past bloodlines, these evil ones after the flood and probably before the flood, who have separate tombs alongside of the abyss. So you need to understand the relationship to be able to understand these dual prophecies and to understand everything that's going to happen in the end time and not be deceived. So I have a few handouts if you want a little more depth and detail on this. So if you want to learn about the what I call the ancient KKK and the Kadmonites and the Kedar and how the Kenizzites and the Kenites also fit in, I have a handout on that. Just get a hold of me through the Genesis6Conspiracy.com, which has an email on it where you can contact me, or contact me at Genesis6Conspiracy@gmail.com, which is the website email address. I also have one on the mighty men and the grand men of the end time, linking Joel 1 and 2, 3 and 4, Ezekiel 38, and those terms that are used in Revelation and the New Testament to describe the same type of people that goes back to these Rephaim. And I also have a series on Isaiah 13 and 14 that walks through these fairy kingdoms and also this dual prophecy aspect, and will get you fully sort of not knowledgeable but ready to look at scripture in a different way so that you can properly understand that. And I'm currently working on Ezekiel 32 that I'll probably have to put out in a two-part series that is kind of an extension of the Isaiah seven-part series 13 and 14. So that's been the Rephaim kingships and dynasties and prophecy. So hopefully you're going to look at prophecy a little bit differently after today. And if you want to get a hold of me, the best way to get a hold of me is through the Genesis6conspiracy.com. And I want to thank everybody for their for watching the show today. And do feel free to contact me anytime with questions or comments that you may have. Thank you.